We Made This.
Welcome to Podcast 616, a Marvel Cinematic Universe podcast on the We Made This podcast network. Here on Podcast 616, we discuss all things MCU, covering current MCU shows, films, and even a little throwback now and then to pre-MCU Marvel content. I am your host today, Ashley Thomas, aka The Nerdy Blogger. I'm a staff writer at Fangirlish.com, the Sci-Fi 5 podcast, and a recurring guest host here and there on the We Made This podcast network. I'm joined today by writer and podcaster Mike Jozik. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing well. Thanks for... I guess we're both kind of invited to be on this episode by the gang at large.
So
thanks to everybody for having us on. Together again for the first time.
Yeah, together again for the first time. At some point in the near future, you'll be hearing a Luke Cage episode that Mike and I recorded, beginning of March, end of February, something crazy like that.
Yeah, it was just before the Netflix shows left Netflix, so.
Yeah. And now you can watch them all on Disney Plus, so yeehaw. All right, but that's not what we're talking about today. We are talking about Moon Knight. So, Mike, tell me what you think about Moon Knight so far. Did you have any familiarity with the character, read any of the comics? What's your story with Moon Knight?
I was a Moon Knight reader back with the original series with Doug Mensch and Bill Sienkiewicz. Always kind of dug the character. I probably tuned out with him around the time he joined the West Coast Avengers, which I think was the late 80s, maybe the early 90s. And haven't really kept up with him much since then. So most of my Moon Knight knowledge and taste kind of goes back to like the OG series. And it's kind of what I was hoping for when I heard the announcement with this series coming out. We'd seen how Marvel had dealt with kind of street level heroes with the Netflix shows and, you know, Daredevil, who I think is kind of very much sort of in line with the character of Moon Knight, tonally anyways. That show was really great, so I kind of had high hopes for this one going in.
So I am coming from the complete opposite end of the spectrum. I had no prior context for Moon Knight. I was interested because it's Marvel and make mine Marvel. I like Oscar Isaac very well and was excited to see him join the MCU. I'm perfectly happy to watch any and all Marvel content that gets thrown at me. So I'm going to be honest, though, Moon Knight's not been my favorite so far. If I were going to give this show a rating out of 10, at least for the 5 episodes we've seen, we're going to have a total of 6. But for the 5 episodes we've seen, and spoiler alert, this week's episode definitely raised the bar for me. But if you'd asked me last week, I would have given it maybe a 6.5 out of 10, mostly just because I don't know what's going on. maybe a 7, just because I like Oscar Isaac, and I think it's fun to watch him have chemistry with himself. That's very entertaining on a bunch of different levels. But, was still having trouble really getting into the story, really feeling compelled. Now, bring in this week's episode. That bumps it up like a whole point for me. Like, now I'm more like 7, 7.5. So
I think I have to agree with you that I've kind of been sitting in that 6.5 to sort of 7 sort of spread as far as ratings. I was kind of worried coming on because I thought, oh man, I bet you everybody's going to love this show and it's just going to be, you know, every episode is going to be praising and I'm going to come on and I'm going to be like, it's kind of middle of the road for me, but I've listened to a few of the podcasts previous to this one, and it sounds like the opinions are kind of up and down with everybody. Everyone's kind of enjoying it, but different levels of where it's kind of engaging them or meeting them, and I think that's a good thing. Because it means that they're trying something different.
Yeah, and I mean, they haven't gone this, like, off-book since WandaVision, so it's definitely a bold choice. Moon Knight is very different from any other hero that we've seen thus far.
Or is he?
Yeah. At least, you know, we've never dealt with someone that has DID. So for those of you following along, you've probably learned a little bit about DID on the way watching Moon Knight. DID stands for Dissociative Identity Disorder. Occasionally it's referred to as Multiple Personality Disorder. But I believe the proper term is DID. I am not a psychologist. I do not have a psychology degree.
I believe that is the current terminology, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, definitely a bold and an interesting character choice to add to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. So, if we're talking this week's episode, what would you give it out of 10?
It's still super fresh in my mind. I guess for the listeners, we both are kind of hot off of just watching this. So we're kind of processing our feelings in real time. I think when the episode started, I probably would have been more in that 6.5 kind of range. But by the time the episode ended, 7, 7.5, you know, when it kicked in, without getting kind of too deep into it, it was like, oh, this is going to be one of those shows.
Yeah,
which we've seen on many other genre series. And I believe it's been commented on in previous episodes of this podcast as well. But I do think that Oscar kind of pulls it off in the end. And that kind of raised the bar for me. Although I don't understand how this is the penultimate episode of a season.
Right? I was like, we've got 6 more episodes to get the rest of the story,
like,
right?
This should be the midpoint, right? This is
right?
where the hero comes to terms and is all of a sudden, you know, like, galvanized. And now they move against the forces against them.
Yeah. Yeah. That would have been my thought as well. That is not what happened.
So I kind of had that free-flowing 6.5 to 7.5, but it ended on the high note. How about you?
Yeah, about the same. I think by the end, I'm going to give this one about a 7.5. I think they really stuck the landing, and they did a good job. By the way, I don't remember if I mentioned it clearly. We are talking about Moon Knight, episode 105, Asylum. With this episode, I felt like, oh, it was basically many aha moments, like, the whole time. I'm like, okay, that part makes sense. Okay, now this makes sense. And so I was very happy with all of that. I think, yeah, Oscar Isaac, obviously MVP, because, I mean, he's basically the only person in this episode. But, you know, watching him wrestle with his past and work through these really difficult things that he's experienced, man, that was some good acting. That's some good storytelling, and really made the character of Mark Spector and Stephen Grant, characters, I should say, much more compelling to me. I'm definitely more into the story, but you're right. I really felt like this should have been episode like 3 or 4 out of 6, not episode 5. Because now I'm like, are we going to have like a 2-hour... final episode, because I don't know how we're wrapping this story unless it's like gonna bleed in directly to another series.
Feige addressed the press when what came after WandaVision? Falcon and Winter Soldier. Because WandaVision was broken up into like 10 episodes and Falcon and Winter Soldier was coming out as 6 episodes, people were like, well, what's the format? And he said, 6 hours of content. The deal with Disney Plus is to produce 6 hours of content. So whether that's broken up in smaller installments or just however long the episode needs to be, they're budgeted in producing 6 hours of content. So going into this season, they knew it's going to be 6. Hawkeye was 6. Like, that's, I think the only reason they broke WandaVision down was because they wanted to preserve the half-hour sitcom format of those early episodes.
Right, makes sense.
And that's what kind of caused some confusion with people. But initially I was thinking the plotting was odd for the 6 episodes, and as it's kind of gone on, I've continued to feel that. And usually, and I argued this, spoiler for people who have yet to hear our Luke Cage episode, with most of those Netflix series and even some of these Disney Plus series, I think they don't necessarily have to be as long as they are, but I think this one should be longer. I honestly think like 2-3 episodes tops, but they don't have enough time to sort of just let you sit and deep with the characters. We're getting told a lot of things and then moved along. Like we're going through an exhibit where it's like, here's where we had, you know, this attack on whatever, moving on. Here's where, you know, we meet the character that is your wife, moving on. And this was nice because it gave a chance for some, like, we just literally got to know the characters of Stephen and Mark through this episode. And, you know, they've bounced back and forth over the last 4 episodes, but I don't know, for me, it just wasn't really ringing true. Like there didn't seem to be any rhyme or reason to it. And even though, I mean, maybe going back and rewatching it, I'll be like, oh, now I see it. But doing it in this week to week format, it wasn't until here that I actually really kind of cared for the characters, which is a bad thing for your second to last episode.
yeah. And I'm second everything you said. I wouldn't say that I didn't care about the characters, but I did not have near the emotional investment.
That's what I mean.
Did. Yeah. With, like, you know, Kate Bishop, first time I'd ever encountered that character. I never read any of the comics or anything like that. And so I'm watching Hawkeye and I'm just, you know, really getting interested in who this person is and what she's up to, what she's doing, why is she the way that she is. I think one thing that does kind of lend this this type of storytelling well to Moon Knight is that I feel like maybe it's supposed to be thematic that the viewers are just as confused as Steven by the end of the episode. Like, wait, what? What just happened?
I did consider that, yeah, because it keeps you're not on solid footing, just like the character.
Right, exactly. I mean, maybe that's what they're trying to do, but I feel like that's giving them a really big benefit of the doubt on some level as well, so I don't know. We'll see.
I would have liked to have seen an episode. I mean, they essentially have a bit of a love triangle with Layla because, you know, Mark's the dashing one and the one who actually married her, but Steven's the one who's kind of more sensitive and communicative and kind. And I mean, she obviously sort of likes both aspects for certain reasons. And Mark was jealous of Steven's attention for Layla, and Steven obviously has a crush on Layla. That could have been played with so much more if it was given a little bit more room to breathe. And it was just really kind of like skipped by quite quickly. And then like, let's move on to the next idea.
Yeah. Well, let's dig into Asylum and talk through some of the plot points and give our thoughts and see where we end up by the end. So let's get started. We are starting out in the hospital, right where we left off, where Mark and Steven have run down the hallway and encountered a giant hippopotamus in Egyptian garb. First of all, what was your reaction to seeing that at the end of the last episode?
I was curious. Not terribly surprised. More than anything, I was like, okay, this is cool. I want to see how this plays out. And I'm kind of 50-50 on how it played out. It's just the kind of thing I think this show needs to be doing. And I think it shines best when it is doing, because it does have kind of a weirdness to it. And when it really embraces that, it stands apart. It becomes kind of its own thing, and it's not just superhero face punch.
Right. For me, I was just completely confused the entirety of episode 4. Like, I do not understand what on earth I'm supposed to be watching right here. This is very bizarre and strange and, you know, wait. Mark's found himself. He's found Steven. What? okay, and now we're running through the hall. We're running through the hall, and then we see a giant hippopotamus because why the hell not? At this point, we're way down the rabbit hole.
I figured since we're already dealing with avatars and we were introduced, another idea that was sort of introduced and then moved away from when they had the council meeting and you had everybody there sort of as an avatar. And so they kind of introduced the world of the gods, and I figured this was going to be, you know, another somebody from the Egyptian pantheon, and it was going to have some kind of relation to that. Mm-hmm. And it did.
Yeah. Were you familiar with Egyptology at all before watching Moon Knight or reading Moon Knight?
Not big time. More so when I was younger, but I just haven't really focused on it very much kind of since then. So I still know kind of what I remember from some of my comic books and some of the Mummy movies. But the real hardcore stuff, I know a few names of certain deities in the pantheon, but
mm-hmm. Yeah, I not super up on my Egyptian god and goddess pantheon. Most of my knowledge comes from maybe a 6-week unit on Egypt in sixth grade social studies, and that's been a little bit. And what little bit I've picked up from sci-fi and Moon Knight.
Hours and hours of Stargate.
Yeah, I've never actually finished Stargate, but it's definitely it's work in progress. It's one of Mr. Nerdy Blogger's favorite TV shows. He actually likes that a lot. It might be his most favorite sci-fi show, actually. So, but. Anyway, yeah, so not super up on my Egyptology, but, you know, I them just running into the hippopotamus goddess that we met, and her name is Tauret? Was that how you say it?
I honestly don't remember the name.
I wrote it down. I did watch with the captions on, so I at least spelled it correctly, but I probably just butchered that. I am so sorry, giant, beautiful hippopotamus goddess. They run into Tauret. I laughed out loud because this was just funny. I was like, okay, now I like this episode because of this final scene. Okay, that made it worth it for me. But we pick up right where we left off. We meet up with her again, and she just has this really lovely musical voice.
You like the voice?
I did like the voice. Did you not like the voice?
That was one of my disappointments.
Ah, okay.
I was really hoping, like, it's, we're moving into this mythological sort of territory. Khonshu's sort of been portrayed as a bit of a black sheep among the other gods. He's the one that sort of nobody else likes, and there's that scene where he keeps shouting all of his thoughts in that council meeting. So I'm not surprised that they have F. Murray Abraham playing it kind of the way he's playing it. But I was really hoping that there might be some less of a colloquial sort of sense to the gods. Like, she's just talking to them like she's a clerk at a department store or something. She doesn't seem to be a god or a goddess. Mm-hmm. I feel that there's a poetry that kind of maybe could have gotten lost there, especially since this episode was dealing with sort of more of an emotional core and stuff. Lost opportunity, in my opinion.
I did just check to see who the voice was because I'm kind of nerdy about voice actors, but Tauret, her voice is provided by Antonia Salib. This is her very first acting credit, so nice. That's pretty cool. What a way to make an entrance, right? Be a giant hippopotamus goddess. So they run into her, who's the goddess of women and children, and she's like, fun fact, you're dead. That was kind of a surprise to me. What about you? What are you thinking?
I figured they were probably in some sort of purgatory or limbo. The gunshots, either they were going to pull something out of their asses and be like, Khonshu isn't imprisoned and you still have your immortal suit or whatever, and that's what saved you, or he'd be in a coma or something. So yeah, I figured this was a way to play with, you know, the Egyptian underworld. And I gave them, I think, enough credit that they weren't just going to be like, this is your mind palace and you have to come to terms with your two sides of your personality, maybe three, and then you'll regain consciousness. So I'm glad they went the way that they did. And yeah, I wasn't surprised by the death thing. Were you surprised?
Yeah, I was. I was, actually. Honestly, because I've really only had time to watch most of these episodes just once, I had kind of forgotten, oh yeah, they got shot. That's bad. You know, and I was remembering that as you watch it. Again, I haven't been as emotionally engaged with Moon Knight as some of the other folks here have. But this episode, I'm like, okay, now I'm ready to watch them wrap this up. I'm really more interested now. But yeah, so they're dead, which is kind of crazy. She takes them through the door, and we find out, oh, we're on a big barge that's sailing across the sand? What? That's crazy. Oh, and I'm just going to pull your heart right out of your chest, and I'm going to plop it on the scale, and we're going to weigh and see how all of this goes. See if your hearts make weight. But, it, you know, this is the set of scales that we see tattooed on Harrow's arm. So that kind of threw me for a loop. I was like, what is this? She doesn't seem like the goddess that Harrow serves. Talk to me a little more about that. So what did you think about the way all of that was introduced? Like, they're basically, you're right, purgatory, effectively. Not quite all the way to hell, or whatever the Egyptian equivalent of that is, or paradise. So we're still trying to figure out which way they're going to go. So what do you think?
Again, not being overly familiar with Egyptian mythology, I'm not sure. I do think that Amit's scale idea is different from Tauret's scale, because like hers is measuring your quality, essentially, whether you're going to, you know, be stuck in the river of sand or whether you're going to be with the golden reeds, whereas Amit's is more of like a, well, I mean, same basic idea but different ends. So I don't know if scales work in a broader sense in Egyptian mythology, like if they're kind of all over Egyptian mythology, and that's just maybe something that's common, or if there is supposed to be some sort of connection. Yeah, I don't really know much about Amit, so I never thought about that connection between those scales, even though it was even like explicitly mentioned.
Well, and it's interesting because she points out, one, there's a couple things need to happen. They need to uncover what they're hiding from each other. It seems like there's definitely... Steven obviously has gaps, and Mark's not explaining how he got the powers or how they ended up in this situation. So that's a concern. But and we'll touch on this later in the episode, but she makes a point that souls are ending up in the sands of the dead. Is that what they're called?
The river had a name. It was like Duat or something.
Yeah, Duat. Thank you. Yeah, so that... But she's like, they're landing here before their time or without being properly weighed or whatever. So basically, that's our cue that obviously, yeah, we weren't real keen on Harrow doing what he's doing. But if you needed a hint that, oh, what he's doing is definitely not good and it's not in line with the will of Amit, then... we need... here's your sign.
And that the end game for the show has started.
Yeah, yeah.
So we'll probably be joining things in progress when we start next episode.
But first, you know, before we find that out, she sends them on a mission. We're going to be figuring out, like, how they... she says their hearts aren't full. And so we need to balance these scales. So you need to share what you're hiding. What did you, like, that seemed kind of unexpected to me. Again, maybe it's my lack of knowledge of Egyptian mythology, but did you have any thoughts on that?
From pretty much the end of last episode, I was pretty confident that this is sort of the direction the episode was going to take. Previous commenters on previous episodes have mentioned, you know, the Buffy episode or the Deep Space Nine episodes, other genre shows that have done this kind of internal discovery sort of episode, maybe testing, you know, the character's ideas of what is real and what isn't real. So as soon as I saw Steven and Mark together at the end of last episode, I was like, okay, I didn't realize it was going to take the entire episode. The way things were paced, I was pretty confident that maybe a third or two-thirds of the way into the episode, we would no longer be in limbo, and we'd probably be left with a cliffhanger with Harrow and what's going on with the Amit storyline. So I'm glad that they sort of let it breathe the way they did, but also kind of surprised. I'm surprised with how much time they gave to the execution, not what they were executing, if that made sense.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's well said. Yeah. So let's go with Mark and Steven on this journey. They start wandering the hall again. They find a cafeteria, and that cafeteria is full of dead people. Somehow I feel like this is a violation of very many health codes. I don't care where you are. What about you?
Because this was stuff that I had sort of seen in different forms before, like every new room, every new engagement with a memory or an idea, my interest was just, my curiosity was piqued because I was curious how they were going to handle kind of like the next step. And I mean, as soon as you saw a room full of dead bodies, I figured, okay, these are probably the people that Mark has killed and that we're going to have to deal with this. And so it's funny because talking about this, it really does sum up a lot of my experience with this show, where it's a lot of the expected with a little bit of the unexpected kind of mixed in. Like I'm following through a lot of the storytelling conventions. That's the word I'm looking for. Conventions.
Well done.
But I'm never quite 100% sure how they're going to kind of roll through it and resolve it, so it kind of feeds into the story. I don't know if that answered the question.
Yeah. As a comics reader, this origin story that we're getting, as is effectively what this is, does it line up with the comics, or is it just kind of a new variation on the origin story?
My memory of it is that it's fairly close. I mean, the origin of Moon Knight, Mark Spector, he was a mercenary. He was on a mission in the desert. He was wounded. He was dying. Crawled up to a statue of Khonshu, and Khonshu was like, hey, a little less F. Murray Abraham, but
yeah.
He was like, be my agent of vengeance or whatever. So he brought him back to life and he went back. Stephen Grant was an identity that he took on, which was more kind of like a Bruce Wayne sort of thing. He was like a millionaire. Mark Spector was the gritty mercenary identity that he had. There was a third identity, which was a cab driver named Jake Lockley, which he would use to basically the Matches Malone thing with Batman. He would go around, hear the word on the street. It was an information kind of gathering identity. That's how he interacted with I was going to say the hoi polloi of the underworld, but that's not...
Right.
So this was, unless they've changed things or retconned things over the years, the core of this is the basic Moon Knight origin. I even think that they mentioned Bushman.
Yes,
who is a character that I believe does play into Moon Knight's 80s run. I think that was a character that was introduced by Mention Sienkiewicz. So I can't remember if he was actually there in the comics initially, like as part of the origin.
Yeah, that's good info. I was curious. Everybody that I know of that knows about Moon Knight, they're like, oh, he's basically Batman. And I'm like, I thought Daredevil was basically Batman. Danny Rand was mystical Batman. You know, I thought we had other variations of Batman. Last time I checked, I didn't think Batman had DID, but here we are.
Yeah, and it wasn't multiple personality disorder or DID in the comic books. It was just identities that he took on to, you know, operate with the rich and powerful, or operate with the criminal underworld, or people on the streets, or the Soldier of Fortune set. Unless, again, they've changed that in the comic books moving forward, because I know some people have referred to Moon Knight as being kind of crazy. Maybe it's gotten worse for him, or maybe he just didn't realize that it was DID back in the day.
What really made this story really compelling for me is we find out, you know, at least in this iteration of Moon Knight, how Steven came to be. We get the unfortunate reveal that Steven's brother Randall died in a tragic accident when they, as little kids, were playing in a cave that would get a bunch of water. They were pretending to be in the Stephen Grant film that we learn about in the previous episode.
Was it Tomb Buster?
Tomb Busters, thank you. Yeah, Tomb Busters. So they're playing pretend. They go in this cave just like they would if they were real Tomb Busters, and unfortunately, because of the rain, Mark's brother Randall drowns. It's really a tragic thing. But then we get, post that, we get the reaction of Mark's mother, Wendy, and his dad, Elias. Elias tries to be a peacemaker between his son and wife, but Wendy resents Mark because of Randall's death. Obviously,
super harsh.
Oh my gosh, that broke my heart. I was like, oh no, they're going for it in this. Like, man, that's, I mean, one, I cannot fathom the pain of losing a child. I think it is horrible, and I would not wish that on anyone. Two, everyone deals with pain differently. It is completely wrong to deal with pain in an abusive way. And so, like, you feel sympathy for her because you know she is in agonizing pain over this, but we watch her take that pain out on Mark through what first appears to be emotional abuse, and then later we find out is has shifted to physical abuse as well. She beats him, and it's horrible. Probably going to drop a trigger warning in at the beginning of this episode, just because it was awful, and frankly, I was kind of surprised Disney went there, but they did not shy away from that, so I respect that, because, I mean, I think sometimes you have to show ugly things for people to understand how ugly they are. But also, that was a really painful thing to watch, just as a very empathetic person. I still have a lot of empathy for my fictional characters, so...
That's another one of those instances where I really wish, had this been an 8 or 9 episode series, that, you know, that could have been given more life to, because it's kind of like a hard slap as you're walking by through all the memories and history and whatnot. And I mean, to its credit, it does hit hard, and like, we're both here, you know, a little shaken by it about an hour after we watched it still, but that's exactly the kind of drama that I wish this series would have delved into a little bit more, because Moon Knight has always been on the darker side and more psychological and more atmospheric. And sometimes I think this show defaults a little more to plot over character. And this is when one of these things sort of comes by, that's where I kind of want to like press pause and be like, no, let's live here for a bit. Like, let's explore this and really engage with it.
Yeah, and you know, even though all of the physical abuse was off camera, like you still hear the belt and
Oscar's performance.
Yeah. Mark pulling adult Steven out of the room, like, no, you can't see that, you can't see that, because he doesn't want to remember the horror of that abuse. And man, that just, I can certainly see how he got there, man, because that was rough. That was harsh.
And again, you know, if we had spent more time with Mark, being soldier of fortune, you know, gun for hire, action hero, to have that moment being so vulnerable and so raw and being at the core of his character and why Steven exists. And I mean, that's one of the, like, the key pivot points for his character. I feel that we're reacting more to the act itself, because we can't imagine any child having to endure that kind of abuse and a mother hating her child so much that she would do that. But we're not necessarily, I'm projecting now. This is definitely for myself, possibly for other people, not necessarily feeling that empathy for Mark, but feeling that empathy for like any child that would experience that. Because we don't really know Mark that well.
I think, to be totally fair, this is why. Mark doesn't want to deal with any of this stuff.
And that is fair.
And that's, I mean, obviously that's how we got Steven. Also, just want to say the young man who played young Steven, Carlos S. Sanchez. My goodness, what a, like, I was really impressed with watching him switch between, I'm Mark, okay, Steven Grant is very brave, and he, you know, doing that switch. Obviously, you got the little computer generated, my eyes roll back in my head, and I'm suddenly a different person sort of thing, but, like, his physical performance was really good. He played that really, really well, so kudos to you, young man. That was awesome.
Sorry, I'm nodding. People can't hear me nod.
Oh, all good. Agreed. All good. Yeah. Yeah, this is only his third role.
So, he had a moment right at the beginning as the kids were walking off, and he did such a typical, like, kid actor reaction. I think to when the mom said, make sure you take care of him, whatever, and he was like, oh, I know. And I was like, oh, man, that's every kid on every, you know, cornflakes commercial or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, when he did that transition from Mark to Steven, I was like, oh, okay, kid's got some chops.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I thought that was really impressive. Yeah, so we find out, you know, in the course of a few minutes how Steven came to be. And I just really loved the line, when danger is near, Steven Grant has no fear. Which feels like a tagline from the movie, but... Yeah. But it's also, like, very much a little kid thing that a little kid would say to himself to hype himself up. If he's about to go face down a bully or whatever. And, I mean, unfortunately, this is exactly what's happening. It's the bully is an abusive mom, and it's awful. But Steven says something really poignant to Mark in this. He says, the point of me is to be your stress ball. I mean, I almost laughed, but then I'm like, ooh, ouch, that's effectively what's happening here. I mean, it's a defense mechanism, but, I mean, in some ways, like, for Mark, it's a way to escape, like, the horrors that he's experienced.
We said you were supposed to have a normal life. You were supposed to grow up thinking you were loved. You were supposed to be happy. He was the escape. That's why Mark doesn't want him to know this stuff, because he doesn't want to taint that perfect diorama, I guess, emotional diorama that he's created.
But
to find out that you are the construct and you are essentially a stress ball, that's not great.
Yeah. So, I mean, this on one level was helpful for me as somebody who doesn't have a comics background with this particular character, to finally understand, okay, who was the original and who's the personality that split off. So, and now we find out the original is Mark. So that's pretty interesting. So
I think even comic fans were wondering that, because they have diverged somewhat from the comic book. So when we had these two characters, like we weren't sure what was going on as far as, I'm saying we weren't sure, like, mm-hmm. I'm the spokesman for the community or something.
You are today.
I'm sure many of us weren't sure kind of where they were going with it. Who was the dominant personality? Did one create the other? You know, was one a shelter from hardship or whatever? Especially since there's also the hints of a possible third identity that we're not quite sure of yet. So yeah, I think everybody was kind of up in the air as to where they were going to land with that.
Quick aside, if there's going to be a third identity, they're going to need more time to do that. I don't think they can pull it off in one episode, unless it's like, oh, by the way, I'm insert random third identity here.
Or lose some characters.
Yeah.
Because there's just no time to service everybody.
No. But yeah, that was rough. But then we cut to the scene. It's a scene that we had seen earlier in the episode where Mark is standing on a sidewalk by a car. You see him kind of looking at something in particular. When we first get that scene, we don't see what it is. We're not sure. But now we get another look at it. And we learn that it's Mark waiting outside his family's home, debating on whether or not to go in to his mother's Shiva, which is a funeral, because she has passed. And It's like he has an emotional moment, definitely an emotional breakdown, but he also comes to terms with himself and with Steven. We see Mark when he's switched to Steven, and he doesn't understand, oh, well, how did I get here? But it's Mark reminding him, hey, it wasn't your fault. It wasn't your fault. Or Steven reminding him that it wasn't your fault. So it was heartbreaking, but for me, it was definitely, I think it might be the most powerful moment aside from the reveal of how did Steven come to be. Watching him embrace himself and say it wasn't your fault. It was very cathartic.
Do you feel that moment is stronger or lesser for not having actually seen the incident? Because in a lot of narrative fiction, you would actually see the memory play out. You would see how the brother died. You would see him as a child, you know, dealing with that, and then the following abuse and the everything that sort of followed. And then this would be all of it sort of coming around and finding some sense of closure or acceptance. Or, yeah, I'm wondering, do you think it was better having not seen it, or do you think it would be more powerful if we did see it?
For me, I didn't think about it in those terms. What I felt from that scene was actually a counseling technique. Again, I am not a psychologist. I'm not a counselor, but having been the beneficiary of good counsel, I've definitely experienced a moment like that, walking through some painful things and realizing that I had blamed myself for, I mean, sorry, not to get super personal, but that's the best way I know how to explain it in these terms. But
nobody drowned.
No, nobody drowned. Nobody died. Just to be absolutely clear. But walking through these painful things, and my counselor was like, "What would you say to your younger self?" And I won't say I'm totally skeptical of everything, but I was still like a little like reticent. I was like, "Well, I don't know how I feel about this exercise." And by the time I got to like, I'm ugly crying because I finally was able to like let that go, and I thought that was a really beautiful moment because this is Mark and Steven facing off with each other and saying, "It wasn't your fault. It wasn't your fault." And I felt that was very, for me at least, having experienced something like that, not quite to that extreme, but understanding that that was a very emotionally resonant point for me. So I don't know. I mean, obviously, I'm not asking you to spill your soul on this podcast for public consumption, but for me, at least, it was very poignant on that level. So I didn't even think about it in those terms, like you said. Like, would it have been more poignant if? And I'm like, I don't know, because I was having a counseling moment over here.
It's one of those things I wrestle with the show where, yeah. I mentioned storytelling conventions earlier. And if you're going to criticize the show for maybe succumbing to using the shortcuts because of their time restrictions, if they're making the best use of the time that they have and they're still making some of those emotional beats really hit and ring true and resonate, yes, maybe I would have preferred to sort of have more of a fully formed idea of Mark's life and Mark's trauma, but that would also be a storytelling convention that we've seen many, many times before. So maybe the show is actually going against type by doing it this way.
All the things you uncover as we discuss this episode. It's pretty fun. But after this final poignant moment, we finally understand how Steven got to where he was and where we would pick up at the beginning of the series. We find that Mark and Steven's souls are left wanting. The scales don't balance. And so now they've got to fight off the unbalanced souls. In the what was Duat? Is that what it's called?
The river,
The river Duat. Yes, thank you. So we've got this epic battle, and we actually get to see Steven like test his mettle. Like he's more than just a guy that works in a gift shop and knows lots of things about Egyptology. What did you think about all of that? I thought that was pretty fun.
I liked it, actually. At first I was like, of course it has to end with fisticuffs, because we've had too many emotional moments. It has to end with action. But then to have that moment where Steven says, if it's in you, it's in me, because we're the same person. I liked that moment. And I liked seeing Steven sort of pull out his inner kick-ass and go to town. And I liked the little touch with the, I don't know if you've ever hit a wooden bat against something and you get like that vibration come back to your hand. Just the way he kind of reacted in that moment, that little touch just kind of made it even more real for me. So
I enjoyed the yelling of six. I like cricket. So I love baseball. I don't know a whole lot about cricket, but I can imagine I've definitely experienced that bat reverberation as well with a hit. So
it sucks.
It does not feel nice, my friend. So 10 out of 10 would not recommend. But yeah, so it was kind of fun to watch Steven go to town beating up a bunch of sand people. That was kind of neat. But then our guy falls off the boat. This is bad news.
Man overboard.
Did you see that coming?
No, I actually didn't.
I didn't either. So I feel like I should have.
And the fact that his falling overboard balanced the scale.
Yeah, that was nuts.
So Well, to be fair, the show has had me a few times where I just honestly had no idea what they were going to do kind of at the beginning of the next episode. But I really don't know what they're going to do at the beginning of the next episode. Like, is this the end of Steven? Is Mark now a whole kind of being and we don't have these identities anymore? Or is he going to go back for him? I mean, he hasn't gone through the gate to the overworld.
Well, we do end up, we finish the episode. Mark is standing in a field, which I can only assume is the field of golden reeds. We're not told specifically where he is, but that looks like a field of golden reeds to me.
Because the skill balanced.
Yeah.
So he's in Nirvana. He's in heaven.
Yeah. The field of golden Egyptian reeds, whatever. Heaven. Yeah. Whatever she said about there are many planes of unconsciousness that run together.
That was actually something I appreciated about this, because of the circumstances of where they were when they were shot and they died, they happened to be going through ancient Egyptian undead process rather than, you know, dealing with Judeo-Christian or like any other religion. So it's, and I mean, she, Tourette?
I think so.
Where she goes, we haven't had anybody through here in like a really long time.
Yeah.
So that was cool. That was cool that we were dealing with this whole, at least for us in the West, this different cultural, what's the word for, like, metaphysical experience? There we go.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, it was interesting. And one of the things that was kind of controversial about Moon Knight before it premiered is that they seem to either be ignoring or glossing over that Mark is Jewish. And the funeral scenes are when we see, oh, by the way, this guy's Jewish. So it's interesting to me to have someone who is Jewish also being intertwined with an Egyptian god, you know, thinking of back to the Exodus and things like that, where the Hebrews were, the children of Israel were enslaved in Egypt. So there's like this interesting cultural and historical dissonance in here. And I'm curious to see if we're going to lean into that more. We may not be. Obviously, we've got one more episode left and there are tons of other things to wrap up. And this is like, you are given the visual cue, the guy is wearing a yarmulke, and that's the only, like, mention of his Jewish upbringing. So, it's interesting, as someone who is fairly WASPy, but the American version, I suppose. But it was interesting to see that. One other comment on Mark making it, I guess, to the field of golden reeds. IMDb notes that the song that plays at the end of the episode is a Latin American hymn called Beyond the Sun, created by musician Stanislao Moreno. I hope I said that correctly. And the lyrics are, beyond the sun I have a place, a beautiful place. and we see Mark at peace with himself and in contrast to the moon, which is thematic of the show. I thought that was a really interesting point that I did not connect when I saw it. So,
yeah, and you don't know if Mark is happy to be there or if, mm-hmm. or if he's like, oh, what he do looks, we do now? Like,
yeah.
He's got kind of a neutral...
Yeah. I mean, the person that wrote this bit of trivia on IMDb says that he looks at peace with himself. I personally thought he was like, oh, is this where I am? He seemed like maybe a little confused, maybe neutral, like you said, somewhere yeah. in that neighborhood.
I'm looking at the clip right now, and he looks stymied.
Yes, that's a good word for this, stymied. Thank you.
I mean, he just came out of an action scene where they were fighting for a certain goal, and he not only lost the partner who is himself who he was fighting with, but he also didn't head back up to any body, even though we were told earlier that if they went back up to the body, they'd go to the body that was shot and they would just die anyways. But the objective they were seeking has not been achieved. So has all of that been erased? Is he now standing amongst the reeds and being like, oh, cool, I'm dead, I can be happy. All of my inner turmoil has been resolved and I can just go off into the quiet good night. Or is he like, oh crap, this isn't where I was supposed to be.
Right. Yeah. So hopefully we'll get some good answers for that next week. So any final thoughts on this episode before we wrap?
No, not really. Just to reiterate that it was a much needed kind of push up a couple of notches a couple previous episodes. I have no idea how they're going to go into a season finale next episode. Like, even just thinking back to other Marvel shows, when you're in those last two or three episodes, you kind of feel it winding up and you kind of have a sense of where it's going. And things have already started. I mean, he's probably going to find his way back somehow. Khonshu still has to be freed.
Right.
There's a lot of dangling. Yeah. Like, where's Layla?
Right? Yeah. There's a lot of stuff to wrap up, and I'm concerned we do not have enough time to do it.
It'll probably end on a cliffhanger.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. It'll probably be the cliffhanger of, oh, here's our third personality, and Mark and Steven are somewhere in between being in sand and in the reeds, so... Who knows? Who knows? At this point, like, I have been so, like, befuddled and confused by everything that has occurred until this episode. I have no clue or expectation of what will happen next week. So
that's kind of where I've been at for most of the show.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm just along for the ride, kind of like Steven.
It's definitely one that I'll be happy to kind of go back and revisit. I've wondered if it's actually, because some shows work better when you're separated by weeks. Some shows work better as binging. And I wonder if this is a binge show.
I think for me, it's going to need to be, because going from week to week, I've been so like, I don't understand what the hell is happening. In almost every episode, I have forgotten most of the big plot points, with a few exceptions by the time the next week rolls around.
We have so much other noise in your life, and then you come back and you're like, where were we?
Yeah, like, oh yeah. And then, like, you know, a few minutes in, I'll the gears will start turning and I'll remember. But, like, I feel like everything has just been so odd and unusual. And maybe, again, I mean, you're more familiar with the character than I am, and you sound almost as confused as I am. So I don't know that I am helped or hindered by not having comic book knowledge.
Yeah, I from people I've talked to, I do think that not having comic book knowledge makes the show a little more entertaining, just because you have fewer expectations.
Right.
But they have diverged enough from the comics that I think the comic people are, you know, we see the clues and the Easter eggs and the hints and the callbacks and stuff, but the thing overall is kind of its own thing. And I don't know if it matches anything that was going on in the comics. One of the things that I've been wrestling with is, like, we talked about the Batman thing. Moon Knight is essentially street level, guy in a suit, and, like, this is a magic suit, and it has magic powers, and it makes him, you know, invulnerable to damage, but you don't really see do anything magic. He's in the suit and all he does is just jump around and kick and punch people, which he could do without the suit, only he's not invulnerable. So I struggle with sort of the purpose of the Moon Knight identity.
Right.
And I was talking with a coworker today about it, because I was telling him he's watching it too. He's loving it. He knows nothing about the comics and he adores it. It's his favorite Marvel show.
Oh, cool.
But we both agreed that when Moon Knight shows up in costume, it doesn't feel special. It's like, oh, there's a costume now. And then, oh, okay, the costume went away. And oh, the costume's different now. And okay, the costumes are tied to each individual personality, but it's not like when your hero suits up and you get like that iconic.
Oh yeah.
And again, is that on purpose or is that a shortcoming?
Yeah, no, it's interesting. And honestly, I kind of like the Psycho KFC suit a little better. I thought that was a little more scary watching the trailers and having no context for the character. I'm like, ooh, he's just wearing like this like skull mask and it's creepy, and he's wearing a suit and he's pulling on a glove like he's like a sadistic doctor. Anyway. But yeah, so I'm just along for the ride. I'm eager to wrap this, and I'm really looking forward to Ms. Marvel. I'm going to be doing a lot of Ms. Marvel coverage here on Podcast 616, and then
coming up soon.
Yeah, and then later this summer, hopefully, or early fall, we're going to get She-Hulk, and she is my all-time favorite comic book character. Full stop. Period. And I just adore Tatiana Maslany on so many different levels, largely for Orphan Black and all of the wonderful characters she plays there. So, you know, going from 14 characters to 2, you know, that's it's going to be a walk in the park for her. But I'm really looking forward to other MCU stuff. And don't get me wrong, I'm not hating on Moon Knight. If that's your jam, wonderful, more power to you. I'm just confused as hell. So
it's an entertaining show. I mean, I haven't been disappointed with the episodes in the sense of like, oh my god, I've wasted an hour of my life.
Right.
I could have been doing something else. If anything, and I think this was mentioned in either the last episode or the one previous, someone referred to it as Legion Light.
That's fair.
Legion is one of my favorite television shows of all time, and it is bonkers crazy and bold, and the way that it deals with mental health issues and issues of identity and agency and power and corruption and all of this sort of stuff, it was like next level. And this show, and when they hired Moorhead and Benson to work on this show, I thought, okay, they're really going to go all in on this, because Moorhead and Benson make really cerebral, weird, atmospheric sort of science fiction with a tinge of horror to it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little bit more magic mummy rap and jumping around punching people than I thought it would be. And, you know, the DID is there, the mental health stuff is there, but I wish they'd sit with it more. I wish they'd explore it more, but I don't know if that's a Disney thing or if it's a time thing or what. Maybe people are afraid of dealing with more difficult things.
Yeah, yeah. And again, we've only got 6 hours. There's only so much you can deal with that. But yeah, I believe Dan was the one who said that, Dan Owen, talking about it being Legion Light. And I've only seen like the first 3 episodes of Legion. I enjoyed what I saw. I could not tell you what I saw. But I was impressed, but with the serious sci-fi tinged with horror. I think that you could ascribe that to Moon Knight as well. I remember those first shots we got of Khonshu. I was like, ooh, what the hell was that? That was scary looking. Ah, and I love horror movies, so I was all in. So yeah, I thought that was bonkers.
It has been fascinating. The few opportunities I've had to talk with people and listening to episodes of this show, we're all watching the same thing. And even those of us who are saying we feel there's some missed opportunities or more potential that the show isn't necessarily hitting on, we don't always agree on what the things the shows are hitting on and not hitting on. So we're like, someone might not like, I'm just going to pull things out of the air. Like maybe somebody doesn't like the suit, but I absolutely love the suit. But
yeah.
I don't really like the multiple personality thing. And somebody else is like, we can find people that we agree with who aren't maybe full on 100%, this is the best show ever, but it's hard to find somebody who's picking the same stuff out of it that you are, which is something I kind of love about this show right now.
Yeah. 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 I mean, and that's, I think one of the best tells of good art is that two people can watch or read or consume this very same art and have completely different interpretations of it. I think that's fascinating, and Moon Knight's a great example of that. Because you're right, and while I say, yeah, I don't really know what to think about this because I think it's confusing, I'm definitely not bored. I'm definitely interested in what's happening, even if I don't, you know, getting a little lost in the weeds trying to watch it. So
I don't know what it is, so it must be art.
Right? I don't know what's art, but I know what I like. Very good. Well, Mike, this has been a blast. I've really enjoyed getting to podcast with you again. If listeners of Podcast 616 want to connect with you, what is the best way for them to do that?
Got two other podcasts for your consideration and a podcast named Scooby-Doo. There's social media for both, at FYC Show or at Scooby-Doo Cast on Twitter and Instagram. I think it's the full names on Instagram. There's Facebook pages. Basically, if you search those podcasts, it'll lead you to the social medias and the other things. But the Twitter's probably the easiest kind of connect there. So
very cool. Any other projects or anything you got going on right now besides hanging out with me on Podcast 616?
There's a couple of shows that I'm developing. Moving a little bit slowly. People's schedules, just trying to get the people who are required to do it in the same place at the same time.
Yeah, it's always the challenge. So, yeah.
Until that happens,
stay tuned.
Like I said, for your consideration, talking about movies with my co-host Dustin and a podcast named Scooby-Doo, doing an oral history of the Scooby-Doo franchise.
Very cool. I am excited to listen to your Scooby cast. I love Scooby-Doo very, very much. Very cool. All right. Yeah. Well, if you folks want to connect with me, there are a few different ways to do that. You can connect with me on Twitter and Facebook. On Twitter, I am at The Nerdy Blogger. And you can like my Facebook page. Facebook. Turn into Sean Connery for a second. Good grief. I'm going to leave that in because that's funny. You can connect with me on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdyBlogger.
Some of the things in here aren't acceptable to Facebook.
Rah. Shuck it, Trebek.
Sorry, what's the Sean Connery impersonation start? Like, nobody can
stop. No, it's too late. But you can read my words at fangirlish.com. You can even read them in a Sean Connery voice if you wish. You can also read them at nerdyblogging.wordpress.com. You can hear my words being read on the Sci-Fi 5 podcast. That is 5 minutes of science fiction history, 5 days a week. I contribute a few scripts a month to that. And you can also hear me not only on several shows here on the We Made This podcast network, but you can also hear me on my own show that I do with some friends. It's called Dearly Debated, where we fuss at each other about film, television, comics, whatever we're geeking out about. So thank you for joining us for another episode of Podcast 616. If you've enjoyed today's show, please give us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also share the show with a friend. You can also support us on Patreon at patreon.com/wemadethis. Moon Knight isn't all we're talking about here on the We Made This podcast network, so stay tuned for a moment and find out more of what we're discussing on We Made This. But until next time, it's good night from Moon Knight.
Elsewhere. And We Made This. A Dream Given Form. A Babylon 5 podcast.
The isolationism is talked about a lot in the episode with this entire, but Londo's isolation is so heartbreaking to watch. Their final scene of dialogue together between Londo and Jakar is, it's so powerful when Jakar says, I can't forgive this entire, but I can forgive you. And that music, as Lon touches Jakar's arm and leaves, gives me goosebumps. It's so beautifully done.
I'm not going to lie, that I kind of welled up when Jakar forgave him. It really does.
Yeah.
It really does get me. But yeah, it's a very sad story, but that's what makes Londo's journey such a captivating journey to watch throughout the five seasons.
Free with this month's issue.
This is Skin Lab and Dissolve.
Yep.
That f***ing riff, man.
What a track.
So good.
I love that lyric as well. I'm disappointed that he didn't write it himself.
Did he not?
No.
Which one?
It's not what they call, it's what you answer to, is a W.C. Fields quote. I've just looked it up.
Yeah. Oh, I quite like that even more now.
For a second there, I thought you were going to say it was a WCW quote.
Yeah. Oh, Sting coming out. Yeah. Bit of that Eric Bischoff in the middle of the ring. Yeah, let's re-record it. And Ian, if you could just say that, that'd be fantastic.
Sure.
But no, I love this. It's definitely Machine Head influence, isn't it? I mean, they're from San Francisco, so, which is not a million miles away from the Bay Area, of course. But,
There's a bit of Far Beyond Driven era Pantera in there as well, particularly with the deep low voice in the verses.
Oh yeah.
Geek Polymath.
So what is it about RuPaul's Drag Race that particularly appeals to you over everything else that you could possibly like in geek culture?
It's impossible to narrow it down to one thing, because it's literally everything about it is everything that I like. So you've got legitimate competition, because 9 times out of 10, the loser is the one who does the worst. So one of the problems with reality TV is that they keep the controversial people in and they send home the boring people. That's something that happens around it, and it becomes quite disappointing.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This Podcast Network.